This audio circuit is capable of delivering over 10 watts of power to a 10-ohm load with less than 2% distortion at the normal listening level of 1 watt. This thick film hybrid has been in production since mid-1967, so the field failure rate has been accurately determined. It is gratifying to note that the failure rate of the entire module is as low as that of a single transistor used in a discrete version of the circuit. Since this module replaced 15 discrete components, each of which had a finite failure rate, it is clear that the overall reliability of the system has been improved. The first total success with a monolithic integrated circuit came in the form of an FMIF limiter and detector. Limiting is achieved with three differential amplifiers for a total of 60 dB of 10.7 MHz gain. And the monolithic chip also employs a balanced quadrature detector, which was difficult to manufacture in discrete version because of unbalanced components, but transistor matching comes naturally in a monolithic structure. This monolithic circuit with five capacitors and a simple coil replaced 35 discrete components, more than doubling the average reliability. Because of this excellent field reliability and improved performance, this integrated circuit is now standard on all AMF and DELCO receivers. The most drastic reduction in receiver size was a result of another monolithic integrated circuit, the stereo decoder. This complex chip enabled a 38% decrease in receiver size. A synchronous detector is used in the circuit to decode the stereo information by producing the product of a stereo composite signal and a 38 KC square wave. This time multiplexing of the stereo composite signal at a subcarrier frequency rate yields separation of channel information. Because a square wave was used as a sampling pulse, crosstalk was inherent, but this was minimized by adding a matrix circuit to the synchronous detector. It feeds in a fraction of an out-of-phase stereo composite signal, which cancels out the undesired crosstalk. With this, under normal conditions, in excess of 30 dB of separation is obtained over a wide audio frequency range. Each channel of this IC has an emitter follower output, which isolates the de-emphasis circuit from any changing loads, such as balance controls or tone networks, that would otherwise change the de-emphasis curve. Tremendous strides have been made with these monolithic integrated circuits, and continued advancements will be made using ideas such as phase lock loops, gyrators, and active filters to eliminate tuned circuits. Thick film hybrids have also progressed. Currently in production are an AMRF module, an AMIF module, and the previously mentioned audio module. The AMRF module contains an RF gain stage and converter on the same substrate. The AMIF module consists of an IF gain stage, AGC circuitry, the detector, and tweak filter. These two, in conjunction with a previously mentioned audio module, unite to form the first fully integrated AM receiver. It might be informative at this time to briefly review the history of development of this receiver, briefly discuss developments now underway. 1962 was a typical year for a discrete AM receiver. And the AM radio had a totally discrete form until 1967 with the introduction of the thick film hybrid audio module. 1 year later, a three-module thick-film hybrid IC receiver was introduced, and the field results show this receiver to be more reliable than the discrete version. Now under development and nearing a production pilot run is an AM radio using a monolithic integrated circuit for an RF through detector. This radio will continue to use the present thick-film hybrid audio module, but this could be replaced with an integrated circuit that also includes the audio driver. Eventually, an AM radio might be produced using one thick film hybrid monolithic with no other auxiliary circuitry. Thick film monolithic hybrids are integrated circuits with monolithic chips directly bonded to the thick film substrate. Both the FMIF limiter and detector and the stereo decoder are presently being placed on a thick film substrate in the development program. In both cases, the auxiliary circuitry required by the monolithic chip is on the substrate as well as other related circuitry. This could ultimately lead to a wholly integrated receiver using only the substrate for all interconnections, eliminating the printed circuit board. The continued use of integrated circuits in the auto radio is certain. It can be seen that the consumer requirements of increased reliability, performance, and safety through size reduction are being met and will continue to be met with the use of integrated circuits. Thank you. Are there any questions?
We have a car radio has been performing reliably for 6 years so far with discrete components, so therefore there is apparently no need to increase reliability. Therefore, what is the cost picture? Can you comment on that, Tom?
Well, reliability is still a major concern. We do want to improve it. It's a little bit difficult to talk about costs at this time because we are still somewhat on the learning curve and increasing our capability. There is probably not too much difference in costs right now. However, if you project it down the road a couple of years, there are definite advantages.
Yeah. May I comment also? I don't know what kind of radio you have. Perhaps it's an AM radio. But now we're making AM radio, also FM, and Wonder Bar, which is a signal-seeking tuner, and stereo. And the complexity of the radio is getting tremendous. We're also combining it with a tape player. So when you get this tremendous complexity added to the radio, the need for enhanced reliability becomes more severe. I might comment that the only way we can introduce integrated circuits into the radio, goes without saying, is not allowed to increase the cost. And we're giving this as a customer benefit. Most companies who manufacture automobile radios feel that the customer would like to have increased performance without paying an additional amount of money, which I think probably answers your question. It has to be economically feasible by virtue of not increasing the cost. Next question.
The question was, what will we do if a radio fails one day after the warranty expires and the serviceman tells him that he has to replace the whole radio because of essentially one component? There are more components. Even if we lump all the electronics to one IC, we still have a mechanical tuner and pointer mechanisms and things of that type. There's a definite limit on the cost of an IC. I don't think we can definitely say at this time if a one-module radio is feasible. We are definitely taking a look at it, but quite possibly we might prefer to stay with a three-module radio, for example.
The question was, how do you get away from not being able to use very high capacitance values? Of course, we should point out that in making a circuit converting into a monolithic form, there is no need, in fact, it's undesirable to have a one-to-one correspondence between the circuit values in a discrete element circuit and a monolithic chip. You may want to have a constant RC product. The capacitance can be decreased, the resistance can be increased, or you may be able to use a couple extra transistors, which are, in fact, much less expensive to incorporate transistors in a monolithic chip than it is to incorporate resistors, which is extreme opposite from the discrete case. So often there's a redesign in the circuitry which can get around the need, obviate the need for a real high capacitance value. Having discussed radios, we're going to discuss television next. Richard A. Santilli is the manager of linear applications at RCA in Somerville. We'll discuss the transition to linear integrated circuits in television receivers. Mr. Santilli.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. As Dr. Stein indicated to you, my paper this afternoon is concerned with the transition of color television to linear integrated circuits. Actually, the transition of the signal processing circuits in color television to monolithic linear integrated circuits is an evolution that's already in progress as far as I'm concerned. In some receivers, this has been a transition directly from receiving tubes. In other cases, it's been a transition from solid-state, discrete, or the hybrid phase. In any event, it's an evolution that started about 4 years ago. It's the purpose of my paper here this afternoon to review the brief history of this evolution in order to provide you with a chronology so you'll have an appreciation of what happened, why, and how, to indicate a little bit about the present status, and, of course, to speculate a little bit about the future. In discussing linear integrated circuits, and I want to reemphasize that I'll be talking strictly about monolithic devices, I'd like to concentrate on custom integrated circuits. That is, I'd like to exclude where a common differential amplifier could be used, either as an amplifier or an oscillator, a timing element, whatever the case may be, and concentrate specifically on custom circuits for color TV. And as Dr. Stein indicated before, since this is a survey, I'll be covering types other than RCA types in order to make the survey complete. The evolution that I'm talking about started in 1966, and as far as I'm concerned, it has grown very rapidly. In 1969, a approximately 3 million linear integrated circuits were used in color television receivers. It's anticipated that by 1972, this number will grow to about 16 million, and by 1975, to about 30 million. Let's take a look at how this might happen. The first subject we get into, of course, in discussing the application of integrated circuits to color television is always one of partitioning. Actually, I think most people are quite interested in finding what the optimum partitioning scheme is. As a practical matter, I think what we're going to find out is that there's going to be several partitioning schemes, and inter combinations between these will permit many options. Now, how is this all possible? I think there's one thing we have to appreciate. As far as the television manufacturer is concerned, we're really just doing the same job a different way. And so what we basically have to do here is to abide by some ground rules. The ground rules are basically, of course, that we have to provide contributed value. Nobody cares to suffer economic penalty unless they're putting additional performance in. The second thing is, of course, the IC should simplify the system. Or at least for the same complexity, it should provide additional functions. Finally, of course, it should be reliable and not unique to the integrated circuit, but unique to the system. Perhaps the system should be serviceable. Good industry agreement exists on partitioning. That is, specifically the sound IF area, FM detector and audio preamp, AFT, remote control. Incidentally, these were the initial areas attacked, and of course they are peripheral circuits. They require a little interface, and as a result, I mean, that in itself made it relatively easy to design backup systems in case we ran into problems in early introduction. As a matter of fact, no backup systems were needed for any introduction of the ICs that I've indicated here that I know of. The other area is the color demodulator area. That is, the technology exists to do the integration, and really what's required is the circuit innovation. There's one very interesting point here, I believe. We talk about advantage in technology in order to accomplish these feats, really just provide more contributed value to the circuit or make the design simpler, and I think we'll see this as we go along. What I'd like to do now is take a couple of these sections. In fact, I hope I can cover most of them here, and provide the chronology for you on most of them. Let's start with the sound IF amplifier section. In 1966, when the first integrated circuit was introduced into color television, it was the sound IF amplifier, the CA3014, used in the RCA CTC25 series color TV receivers. This particular IC is still in production and is used quite a bit today. Consists of a three-stage direct-coupled FM-IF amplifier limiter, a detector network used in conjunction with a conventional discriminator transformer, and an isolation audio amplifier. In this case, all it was an emitter follower. At that time, of course, the bias supplies were primarily or predominantly diode bias strings, as shown here. It wasn't too long after we introduced this circuit that we realized that we could add some contributed value to it, primarily in the areas of the power supply and the audio amplifier. And this was done shortly thereafter with the CA3041 and CA3042. The IF amplifier limiter is still basically the same, but here we've put in a Zener supply now, which has simplified the decoupling network. We have a separate detector diode network here now, still using a conventional discriminator transformer, and audio options. In this particular case, now we have an audio amplifier that provides gain, about 40 dB of voltage gain, and can provide about 8 volts RMS out to drive a tube, such as a 6AQ5, without an unbypassed cathode resistor. The 3042 was developed in order to accommodate those people who want to drive a single output transistor, perhaps a high voltage output transistor, and this stage had about 30 dB of gain. In both cases, we were easily able to bias these circuits simply by DC feedback from output to input. About this point, we hoped we'd reach a plateau of performance, and we felt a little complacent about the whole situation and said, well, we finally have a good chip to do the job. And of course, I think we all appreciate what happened about that time. Somebody came out with a single-coil FM detector system. In order to be a part of this, and realizing, of course, that it was a very definite worthwhile contribution to the industry, we developed a type to do this also. This type was the RCA CA3065, which was just introduced in the last couple of months. In this particular circuit, the IF amplifier, again, is basically the same. The Zener supply is in the system. We've biased up the audio amplifier, which, and although the FM detector may look a little bit unusual to you, I think for all practical purposes, it's simply a single-coil FM detector system that operates on a peak detection basis. One new innovation, however, that was added about this time was the DC volume control concept. And the DC volume control is adjusted simply by varying DC. Now, why would we want such a system as this? Well, actually, there were two reasons. There were interests in the conventional system of replacing the coax cable, for example, with a single wire system going up to a volume control. And since it is DC, of course, if there's any hum suppression problems, all we can very easily bypass it. Equally important was the fact that we were entering the era where we were beginning to look at all electronic remote control systems as opposed to the present electromechanical system, and such a system was required, that is a DC volume control system. And third, of course, we had to anticipate what would happen if the fellow didn't want to use it, and that's relatively simple. In any event, let's take a look and see what the complexity of a typical system like this might look like. So here we are today looking at a system, and this includes all the peripheral components, by the way, in order to make the system operate, and speculating as to just what we might be able to eliminate. Well, all of us are sensitive, of course, to the fact that we might be able to remove a capacitor here or there, but outside of that, the only vulnerable component that exists might be the coil. Well, this single coil in itself is a relatively inexpensive component, and it's a relatively simple adjustment at this point. But let's speculate a little bit. Actually, systems have been proposed to eliminate that coil. And it's nothing new. Basically, it's a system that most of us are familiar with. It's the phase lock system, where basically all we're doing is take the limited IF, applying it to a comparator, comparing this with a voltage-controlled oscillator running at about the same frequency, getting an error off this comparator, which is basically a differential amplifier, filtering it. This error, once filtered, is really both the recovered audio and can be the correction voltage for the voltage-controlled oscillator. Now, this system was proposed about 2 years ago, and apparently it has some underlying either technical or economic problems, because to my knowledge, no system has been commercially announced using it. The economic problem is one which we have to watch very carefully. The single FM coil that we now use, as I said, is relatively inexpensive, and basically what we're doing here is transposing the cost onto the IC chip. This in itself is a good idea, provided the overall system doesn't incur an economic penalty. Let's remember, the voltage-controlled oscillator that we're talking about here cannot be an LC oscillator. Otherwise, you put the coil right back in the system. It has to be an RC oscillator, typical of the Wien bridge oscillators. At this time, I sort of predict that the type of FM detector systems that we'll see used frequently and in abundance in the near future are of the single coil type. Now, in 1967, 1 year after the sound IF was introduced, the remote control system was introduced. The IC introduced to do this job was the CA3035, and basically was the gain block, the 40KC gain block, up to the broadband 40KC tuned transformer right prior to the drivers. In this particular case, the CA3035 was basically a high gain integrated circuit, that is providing about 110 dB of gain of 40KC. And the circuit the IC required to do that, I think it's rather interesting because IC manufacturers are frequently accused of sticking strictly to differential amplifiers. Here's a case where it's all single-ended. And the integrated circuit consists of three discrete amplifiers, amplifier 1, 2, and 3. Amplifiers number 1 and 2 provide 40 dB of gain each, at 40 KC. Amplifier number 3, when operating into that broadly band 40 KC tuned transformer, provides an additional 30 dB of gain. In any event, since this IC represents the front end portion of remote control systems, it's applicable both to the electromechanical and the all-electronic remote control systems. We haven't made any changes in the circuit since 1967, and at least at this time, I anticipate that we're not going to make any, unless some new concept should arise. At the same time, we also introduced the AFT system, automatic fine tuning. The first system used the CA3034. In any event, the function of the integrated circuit was to provide IF amplification and limiting at 45.75 megacycles or thereabouts, and provide FM detection using a conventional discriminator transformer, some DC amplification to provide error signals to the tuning diodes in the UHF and VHF tuners. In much the same way as the transition occurred in sound IFs, we had the same sort of a situation in AFT. That is, the circuit required to make the original system work was fairly complex. Realizing this very quickly, of course, we decided to develop a type which provided additional contributed value. This we did with the CA3044. Note, the IF amplifier is about the same, so is the detector network. The DC amplifier has changed its complexion a bit. What we've done here now is remove the Darlington inputs, because we found out that we didn't need them, put in a constant current source, and having a constant current source here now, we can get our reference, and of course, we replace the diode string with a Zener arrangement. Once again, we'd hope we reach a plateau of AFT systems and wouldn't have to go any further. However, about this time, we got requests from people indicating, gee, I wish we had a system which was a little bit more sensitive. Right now, we're looking at bipolar systems, and we're really operating at relatively low signals. Couldn't you please do something for us in the IF amplifier limiter section? Provide us with something, perhaps, that has a little more gain. What we did at that point, and this type was introduced a couple of months ago, is to introduce the CA3064, which it, of course, has a completely different appearance, although it performs the same functions. The IF amplifier limiter portion has changed from a differential amplifier to a Darlington input cascode system. This system has about 20 dB more gain than the IF amplifier limiter. The FM detector system still requires a conventional discriminator transformer, and it operates on a peak detection system. Now, this AGC system at first seems kind of worthless, but it turns out it has some definite advantages. Let's consider it's the application of such a unit in a 45.75 megacycle application. If we picture for a moment the IF response, and here the center frequency that we're looking at is 45.75 megacycles, and consider what happens below, we have a considerable amount of signal available to us. So what happens, of course, is the system AGCs, thus maintaining a good AFT bandpass response below 45.75 megacycles. Above 45.75 megacycles, however, the available signal drops off pretty quick. And one of the techniques that's been used to compensate for that is we frequently introduce a small series tuned circuit here on the input. With this particular system, we found out we could eliminate the coil, thus saving some money, since what happened was, of course, that the AGC led up as we above 45.75 megacycles, again maintaining a good response and good pull-in. I might mention, by the way, that there's this particular system has no particular frequency limitation for the TV IF systems that I know about. It's not fussy whether it's 39 megacycles, 45, or 60. The next area that was concentrated on, and where we've seen developments within the past year, is in the chromodemodulator circuit. This is an area where, again, we've seen relatively good industry agreement on partitioning. We have a typical color demodulator circuit. This particular circuit is the Fairchild UA746. It's basically a doubly balanced demodulator. where chrome is fed in on the constant current sources, and the 358 references are fed in on the diff amps. The modulated signal is taken out at the collectors through a resistor matrix, and the color difference signals are provided at the outputs through emitter-follower isolation amplifiers. Being a doubly balanced system, of course, it has an advantage that we do get 358 cancellation, and it requires a minimum of filtering at the output. This listing of circuits that I've reviewed here pretty much indicates where partitioning has been agreed upon in the industry. And now I'd like to go into sections where circuits are available, but where no general agreement has been reached. Picture IF amplifier, which has been developed by Motorola, the MC1352. Now, it turns out that if you've watched the development of this circuit, it's probably gone through several successive stages of improvement in much the same way as AFT or Sound IF. In its present form, it consists of a first IF amplifier, which is AGC-able, second IF amplifier, AGC gate, IF AGC amplifier, RF AGC amplifier, and delay. And I think at this point, represents a good proposal for partitioning, although to my knowledge, at least at this time, it's not in any commercial receivers. It's obviously a contender also for black and white. At this point, we can also take a look at some of the circuits that have been introduced perhaps from Europe. This is the circuit introduced by Philips, the TAA-700, frequently referred to as the Jungle IC, and provides a lot of the interface circuits between the IF and the deflection circuits. It consists of a video preamp, AGC detector, IF AGC, RF AGC amplifier, a noise detector and gate, a sync separator, a vertical sync pulse separator, and a horizontal frequency phase detector. Quite a bit of circuitry. However, another proposal along the same lines, but concentrating on a slightly different area, is the proposal that's been introduced by IT&T. The TAA-790. Here we see the sync separator and pulse shaper, basically the horizontal oscillator and lock-in circuitry, and a noise blanking circuit. I don't think that any discussion of TV would be complete without mentioning a few words about the VHF tuner. As VHF tuners presently stand, I don't feel that monolithic integrated circuits are directly applicable today. It has nothing to do with the technology. For those tuner manufacturers who are using discrete bipolars in the tuners, actually the devices that they're using are extensions of the technology that we're using today, or vice versa. As a result, it really isn't an electronic problem, it's more a mechanical problem. The problem associated with the size of the mechanical switch and working your way into and out of the IC. As I look ahead, though, however, this could change. I mean, we could be talking about systems that are commonly used today in Europe. That is the tuning diode approach, where now the tuner could lose its concept as a black box up in the front and could become part of perhaps the main PC board. Closer to the IF, a piece of shielded circuitry on an IF. And of course, looking at tuning diode approaches, we're talking now about capacitive tuning instead of inductive tuning. We're talking about a relatively simpler mechanical layout also. Thus, the feasibility of getting into the IC and out to provide the actual functions is more appropriate. In conclusion, I'd like to say that virtually all the small signal processing circuits are susceptible to integration, and I expect this to be accomplished primarily through monolithic devices. The partitioning has not been fully defined, but I think it's logical to assume that we're going to have several systems, as long as they all meet the requirements that I mentioned earlier in the talk. And I think I indicated to you that I expect that appreciable inroads can be made by the mid-70s. And where applicable, black and white will use many of the circuits that are developed for color. I think we already see the Sound IF amplifiers that are used in color now being picked up in black and white. And, for example, there's no reason why the picture IF or the TAA 700, which I discussed here, couldn't be used in black and white. Thus, I think that the 70s will indeed be a year of integration. Thank you.
This is the end of the cassette program. Thank you.